Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
This is Devin Nunes. Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We welcome back on again this week for the second week in a row, Tom Joslin. And that is because the Middle East never sleeps, the terrorists never sleep. And Tom Joslin was great to talk about what Iran, the attacks that Iran was implementing in the Middle East throughout the Gulf with mines on ships and the other malfeasance that they're creating in the Middle East and have continued to do. But Tom, I wanted to have you back on this week to take a look back, starting with the Obama administration was dead set on having a nuclear arms agreement with the Iranian regime, the largest state sponsor of terrorism in the world, responsible for the death of thousands of innocent people. And that agreement was done without the approval of Congress. We did not approve it, not that we had to, but the Senate should have had to, that we in the House don't have that responsibility. But in the Senate, they should have had to approve it. They didn't. They were given upwards of $1.5 billion in cash, I believe, as I recall. Trump administration, when Donald Trump was running for office, he says he's going to get in there, he's going to tear it up. Secretary Pompeo at the time, he was a congressman in the House, was dead set against the Iranian agreement, very knowledgeable on it. And it didn't take long for President Trump to say, okay, that's it, we're withdrawing from the Iran nuclear agreement. So, Tom, what am I missing on that agreement and how we got out?
Well, you know, the critics of the agreement, including some of my colleagues, they had some very pointed objections to the terms of the agreement, including, you know, certain sunsets in it that allowed Iran to basically develop what one of my colleagues has called a patient pathway to a nuclear bomb. And the agreement also didn't cover ballistic missiles. They were allowed to increase their ballistic missile technology. There's evidence that Iran didn't allow for weapons inspectors to go into military sites in particular to look at some of what was going on there. And there were other problems in the agreement that basically, in exchange for a very limited sort of inspections on enriching uranium and some other aspects of their program, they basically were able to extract a lot of concessions in terms of billions of dollars in relief and that sort of thing. Also, the agreement didn't deal with Iran, of course, was very narrowly tailored to one aspect, really, of Iran's nuclear program, that in terms of creating the fuel for a nuclear bomb, but didn't deal with any of Iran's regional behavior or lengthy, you know, history of sponsoring terrorism and exporting its sort of revolution throughout the region. Now, defenders of the deal would say, well, that was the point. They just wanted to deal narrowly with a nuclear bomb and the nuclear capacity of Iran. They didn't want to get into all these other issues. They just wanted to prevent Iran from getting a bomb. But the counterpoint to that was, well, this agreement, especially with its sunset provisions, basically didn't take a bomb off the table, certainly not permanently. And in fact, these sunset provisions were going to come out, were going to run their course fairly quickly in terms of any kind of timeline. So basically, there were, you know, there's a big debate over whether or not the agreement actually achieves what their proponents of the agreement said. I come down and thinking that it was a bad deal. But the question becomes, what do you do about it? How do you get out of it? And that's where there were other questions about the Trump administration's plan. You know, it's one thing for President Trump to say he's going to get out of it, but what do you do then? What's the goal then once you get out of it? How do you move forward? And that's where the maximum pressure campaign comes into play. And just recently we saw that Brian Hook, who's a senior State Department official, has explained that the point of the maximum pressure campaign is to try and force the Iranian regime back to the negotiating table. That's at least what the Trump administration says is their goal for this, to negotiate a more comprehensive deal that deals with more than just what was in the Iran nuclear accord, but deals with more of its behavior and activities and that sort of thing. I think at this point it's a long shot, to say the least, that Iran's going to come back to the table and come to some sort of grand bargain or grand deal. I think that the bottom line is that America has to be looking at this long term in terms of containing sort of Iran's aggression and expansion of their Islamic revolution and putting policies in place. And I certainly don't have all the answers, but start thinking about putting policies in place long term to do that.
So a couple of things that have happened is that Iran needs 2.3 million barrels a day to sustain its economy. It's roughly only producing about 800,000 barrels a day. Sanctions have been put on so that many countries around the globe that are all upstanding citizens cannot accept Iranian oil. You see that there are no more waivers. Those waivers ended in the recent months. And then you also have sanctions were announced last month on Iran's economy in some of the metal sectors. So I think maybe one of the biggest things of all, they also, this was something that John Bolton, Secretary Pompeo, worked on, and that is finally declaring the IRGC. So this is the elite force, the Quds force, that's run by the Iranian military, that is really their paramilitary arm that has built that land bridge that we talked about last week that stretches all the way from Iran to the Mediterranean into Lebanon. So, Tom, designating IRGC as a state sponsor of terrorism, what do you think that has done? What does that have the potential of doing in the long run? I think you're right. Short run, there's not a lot to be gained, but in the long run, there is.
Well, the IRGC was designated as a foreign terrorist organization. It's sort of the first time that a component of a foreign military had received that designation, is my understanding. My view of this is it's sort of a natural move when you look at the IRGC's behavior. Terrorism is their business. You can't argue that they're anything but in the terrorism business. I mean, everything they do is to expand the Islamic revolution of Iran abroad, and terrorism is one of the principal instruments they use to do that. So in terms of their actual observed behavior, it's fairly obvious that the IRGC is, in fact, a terrorist organization. The question is whether or not it's effective to designate them as such. And I think what the designation, this more broader designation that was put in place, what it does is it potentially causes problems for anybody who wants to invest in Iran in businesses that are controlled or owned by the IRGC and can put a bright line around them. And to that extent, the fact that the U.S. is following up on this and sort of keeping tabs on what the IRGC owns and controls, it could cause financial problems for them in the long run, which I would say is a good thing. There were already sanctions and designations in place on IRGC officials and components of the IRGC. This was sort of a broader designation, however, that covers the whole thing. And there was some debate over whether or not that would be effective, and I think that remains to be seen. It's up to the administration, particularly the Treasury Department, which sort of keeps track of the IRGC entities, the corporate entities, to make sure that these moves continue to have some bite and basically prevent people from doing business with IRGC companies.
So as this maximum pressure campaign has been implemented by the Trump administration, some really interesting things have been happening with former Obama administration officials. Most notably, former Secretary of State John Kerry. Tom, what is John Kerry doing meeting with the Iranians?
Well, you know, I guess some press reporting sort of implies that he's basically telling them to wait out the Trump administration and don't do anything to provoke even further action from the Trump administration. You know, for anybody who's followed sort of the press coverage through the years of the Trump administration and the accusations of the Trump administration somehow violated the Logan Act, or General Flynn, who was National Security Advisor, supposedly violated the Logan Act, which has never been enforced early on, even before the administration came into power. To see this type of behavior, this is, of course...
Yeah, and just so we can make sure the listeners understand this, after the election, when Trump won the election, during that time period, General Mike Flynn, the former head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, who we now found looks to be totally innocent on all fronts of everything, and it looks like he was in many ways set up by the Obama administration. But during that time, he was having conversations with many foreign leaders. And in fact, he was talking to the ambassador, the Russian ambassador in the United States, and that it was leaked out so that all Americans could hear it, they could read it in the front pages of the newspaper. Something that still irks me is that our FBI, Department of Justice, did absolutely nothing, because likely it was the highest officials who leaked that information, and we may never find that out. But one of the astounding things is that you have the Logan Act, which is a 200-year-old unconstitutional law that's only been tried, never actually been successfully prosecuted on. So the Obama administration dug this out of the box and said, we're investigating General Flynn for violating the Logan Act. So, and there was criticism by all the mainstream newspapers. And now today, getting back to where we were, Tom, you have John Kerry and others meeting with the Iranian regime, the terrorist regime. And where's the cries from the newspapers about the violation of the Logan Act that they tried to go after General Flynn on?
Well, the point is that since a lot of people in the media are basically on the side of Kerry and when it comes to the Iran debate and these issues, you're not going to see that argument made, you know, and you're not going to see that same argument applied to former Secretary of State Kerry, even though his interference and his sort of dealings with the Iranian regime were far more substantive than anything that General Flynn was accused of in terms of active policy and what's going on right now. And all this, I think what you have to keep in mind is that basically the whole debate over Iran is poisonous. And I've certainly had some of this poison sent my way at times. And it's basically what it's become is for certain people in D.C. in particular, they view their enemies or their opponents as sort of their domestic political opposition, people in the other party or people who have different ideas about how America should execute its foreign policy, much more so than the Iranians themselves. I mean, there are people who were in the Obama administration who view sort of Secretary of State Pompeo as their biggest enemy, not the Iranian regime, let's say, in the context of this debate. And so they frame everything in that regard. And so, for example, I'll give you one point example we've talked about, Devin, before, which is this whole issue of Iran and al-Qaeda, where I say to everybody, the official position of the Obama administration, the Treasury and State Department under Obama, from 2011 to 2016 was that Iran and al-Qaeda have an agreement that allows al-Qaeda to maintain its quote-unquote core facilitation pipeline for moving money and people and communications through Iranian soil. And this was something that has existed inside Iran, run by al-Qaeda as part of an agreement with the Iranian regime. And this is all the intelligence and evidence I have on this comes from the Obama administration. It's the official declarations of the Obama administration over the course of five-plus years. And yet, when you bring this up or say this, what you see, and this is a good example of the poison, is that you see people in the media or people from sort of the Ben Rhodes echo chamber claim that this is some sort of warmonger or accusation, that basically they try and impugn my motives or the motives of anybody who brings this up. It's ludicrous because all I'm doing anyway is citing what the Obama administration itself said. And this is one aspect of Iran's behavior, which I think we should shed light on because I think transparency and sunlight are the best disinfectants and they help sort of constrain or illuminate bad behavior and stop it from taking place in the future. And there are other aspects of this as well. But the bottom line is that shows you how poisonous the whole thing has become, that even basic facts, which are accessible to everybody online, we use some basic Google searches, are ignored in the context of this sort of narrative that basically some people in Washington are just looking to start a war with Iran, and that's all that really matters. And so therefore, anything they say is basically based on their bad motives. And what I would say is you see that sort of poisonous sort of invective sent the way of different people. It's sent the way of some administration officials, sent the way of some private citizens like myself and others. And it really makes it impossible to have a rational discussion or debate about this stuff. And it's been going on for a long time. And so it doesn't surprise me that somebody like Secretary Kerry can get away with saying whatever he wants to say to Iranian officials or mixing and mingling with them because that's deemed okay. But it's interesting that just pointing out that the Obama administration said Iran and al-Qaeda were in cahoots in some regard is not okay. I mean, this shows you how ridiculous the whole sort of information marketplace has become.
Well, look, and I think a lot of Americans who are out there that have common sense understand a couple key things. You cannot have the world's largest sponsor of terrorism, state sponsor of terrorism, the Iranian regime, who have blood on their hands for many, many decades, as we've talked about before. We cannot allow them to get a nuclear weapon, which they're getting ever so closer to having, because the first thing they will do is they will proliferate that to their other proxies. And imagine, you know, it doesn't take a very big nuclear device to cause a big problem. And the Iranians would have a way to do it to make it possibly look like it comes from an al-Qaeda operative or an ISIS operative or some other operative, just like the way they've been conducting these attacks where they are doing them through proxies so that they're not held responsible. So I think the American people get that. Hopefully the American people will continue to reject these types of crazy activities that the press supports, like you said, Tom, and, you know, guys like you that are out there just trying to get the facts, who are, you know, really independent voices out there, are accused of warmongers is quite incredible.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, to my mind, the bottom line on Iran with nukes, I think the biggest aspect of this, to my mind, is I don't know what they would do with it if and when they get one. But I know that when I look at what happened with Pakistan, for example, which has a nuclear arsenal, the U.S. has twisted itself in knots, not being able to deal with Pakistan. Pakistan's duplicitous and malign behavior. And, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that Pakistan has the blood of Americans on its hands for the war in Afghanistan, where Pakistan has sponsored and harbored the Taliban, you know, right from its inception. And senior Taliban leadership has been located in Pakistan, and they have facilitation networks in Pakistan. And Pakistan deems them to be the good Taliban because they're going after the U.S. and the Afghan government inside Afghanistan, you know, as opposed to the bad Taliban, which are the jihadis that come after the Pakistani state. But because Pakistan has this large nuclear arsenal, they've basically gotten away with it. The U.S. hasn't been able to deal with it in a way that can really change Pakistan's behavior. Same thing with North Korea as they approach and increase their nuclear capacity. The problem is that this creates all sorts of conundrums for policymakers in trying to figure out how to deal with the North Korean regime that has this, that, you know, the nuclear capacity would be the ultimate sort of defensive mechanism for them. And I think the same thing goes for Iran. I don't need to entertain any sort of theories about how they would actually use a bomb. All I know is that if they get that capacity and they build it up, that you can see that it would basically changes the ability of the U.S. and our allies to deal with their malign behavior going forward. We've already seen that with Pakistan. We've seen that with North Korea. I'd have no doubt it would be the same case with Iran.
Tom, thank you again for coming on and give us the great news in the Middle East.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And Tom, how can people want to follow you? They can follow you on Twitter and also at the Long War Journal.
Yeah, I'm reluctantly on Twitter, which I don't particularly care for, but I'm at Thomas Jocelyn, just my name, and then I also write frequently at Long War Journal, which I help edit, and that's basically where you can find the bulk of my work.
And those of you who are listening on iTunes, you can see, you'll see Tom's Twitter handle there, so you can follow his work if it's not being censored by Twitter, which often, Tom, you are censored by Twitter because I can't read your tweets. But I just want to thank you again, Tom, for being on.
Thanks for having me on.
This is Devin Nunes. Have a happy 4th of July. We'll catch you next Friday.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes Podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
It whips the dust up and rains pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all. Days, 'cause we kept our American faith.
Now it's not our first trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we kept our American faith. As we, the people, free and strong, fight through the dark night toward the dawn.
Afraid.
That's why they call her the home of the brave.
With a prayer and a purpose, we're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. 'Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.